Whenever I'm in a hotel room, I do not.
What kind of hotel?
A room. Yeah. A legitimate establishment.
Unless we're talking about the Philippines, Mel, you guys will eat anything fried as long as it comes with Cokes.
With Cokes. It comes with a Coke. We eat the fried food. We love to eat the fried fish and the fried chicken with a Cokes.
People listening here in Ho Chi Minh City are like gasping right now. I've yet to have a cookie. So any pizzeria, you know, owner, challenge me. Like, I would love to check it out. You know, try pizzas. I miss pizza. I miss pizza back home.
Hello and welcome to this creepy episode of the Bureau Podcast. On this Friday, the 13th of August, I'm Matt Cowan, the Bureau Axe Murderer and your worst nightmare, spooking you out from Ho Chi Minh City. Thank you for joining me. Oh yeah, that's a bit lame, isn't it? But anyway, I have a big show as usual for you today. The Bureau's content manager, Melanie Widowmaker Kasul, is here grinding her axe. Hopefully she won't scare the crap out of you with too much of a dark humour. Or threaten you with her snowflake enraging commentary. How are you, Mel?
I'm good. It's a nice day for podcasting.
And breathing heavily down the line again and ready to trade blows.
In the red corner!
Is
ding, 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 ding.
Andrew the Tranquilizer Tran. How are you, Andy?
What up? Thank you.
Hi, Andy.
Good stuff. Hey, well, in case you haven't worked it out, guys, it's Friday the 13th. Typically a day in the Western world where we might think twice about doing anything risky or doing things like walking under a ladder. In fact, in Vietnam, every day of the week, I wouldn't walk under a ladder. Not for superstitious reasons. Rather, it's highly likely the bloke at the top will fall on me. If not, the can of paint he has resting precariously on the ladder will fall right at the moment I'm under it and kill me.
It's like an insurance issue, not a superstitious issue.
And a life issue. Do you pay much attention to Friday the 13th, Mel? Mm. Is it a thing in the Philippines? Yeah. Are the Pinoys superstitious?
Well, yeah. Yes, we are. And we have lots of those, both coming from Western and our own cultural traditions. In fact, one of my favorite ones is that we need to say, tabi tabi po, roughly translated to pardon for passing by. Whenever we pass by a small mound of earth, because apparently there might be some earth elementals or spirits living there. And you know, you notice this actually being transmitted in other situations. Whenever Filipinos would pass by or, you know, have to go through like a crowd of people. And so we would, you know, cower down a bit and we'd make a hand and arm gesture like we're trying to part the Red Sea and, you know, like asking permission to pass through.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. How about you, Andy? Your background is Chinese, Vietnamese and Aussie. You must have some superstition lurking inside you somewhere.
Mm.
I got stupid one. I don't think that superstitions that are like full Chinese. I mean, it's just something that my mom just said to me so that I just be compliant and then be a good kid. obviously, number four is a big deal. Like in Chinese,
yes.
It's close to death, so that's universal. Other stupid ones is like don't go to sleep, you know, with wet hair.
Ah.
So, you know, you just don't, you know, after you jump out of the shower, you don't jump into bed straight away.
So that's not a medical thing, it's a superstition
thing.
Is it?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, something like that. But then something that I don't know why, but I have done this. I don't know why I follow it, and I don't know how I got it, but whenever I'm in a hotel room, I do not.
What kind of hotel?
A room. Yeah. a legitimate establishment whereby I'm paying a price that is quite reasonable, yet not too extravagant. I try not to have a room that is close by or at the end of the floor.
Oh, interesting. You know
what I mean? So the last room of the floor. Yeah, because they say that there's a lot of evil spirits that get captured on the last part.
Interesting.
Of the room.
I'm thinking of The Shining right now.
It's the coldest. it's the coldest part of the floor if you.
Okay.
Yes.
And cold floor means death.
Interesting.
All right, cool. Thanks for that. Righto, guys. It's a big show today. we start it with some bureau news. Then in the back end, we talk influencing and content creating. We discuss what it's like to make content and probably the most important question, how the bloody hell do you make any money from it in Vietnam? So let's get into it. Okay, this week on thebureauasia.com, I posted a press release about Pizza Hut opening its first outlet in Phnom Penh, the capital of Cambodia. Of course, Phnom Penh is just 240 kilometers or so from where we are here in Ho Chi Minh City. The opening was yesterday. I'm not sure how it went, but they were allowed to have 40 guests at a time. So it looks like Phnom Penh isn't in the same situation as us here in terms of COVID.
I read today that Cambodia has given 14.9 million doses of the vaccine. So that's 6.64 million people of 40.3% of the population. Fully vaccinated.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Already.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it's a very different state. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Vietnam, like I just got this, like if anyone's watching at home or listening, there's a site called covidvax.life and it's this really cool tracker and it just keeps ticking along and I'm just like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yep.
Does it stop at nighttime or not? But it keeps ticking along. We're about 13. We just crossed the 13 million mark.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's up to about 10% of the population. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's
That's incredible.
That's good.
That's raced up because only in the, a week ago it was about 1% or less than. So they've really
amped it up.
Amped it up, yeah.
It's good. Yep. Yeah. Wow.
So Pizza Hut's opening in Phnom Penh sparked some good banter in our bureau Facebook group this week.
What were they saying?
Most commenters were baffled as to why Pizza Hut would even bother opening there, especially in a region that's famous for being stubborn about what they like and tend not to stray far from their local staples, which is fair enough. Unless we're talking about the Philippines, Mel, you guys will eat anything fried as long as it comes with Cokes.
With Cokes. It comes with a Coke. We eat the fried food. We love to eat the fried fish and the fried chicken with a Cokes.
Okay, that's Coca-Cola for anyone listening.
Yeah. Well, you know, we did have the Americans over for like 50 years, so our taste palate definitely has adapted to Western food, specifically fast food. How about you, Andy?
Well,
Andy's actually, a bit off today.
The cool thing is that with Coca-Cola, like in Hong Kong, for instance, we love to throw lemon in our Coca-Cola for some weird reason. Like anything.
You do that.
I'm so used to drinking lemon tea.
You do that, Mel.
But we just throw it on anything.
Sometimes, yeah. But how about pizza? Do you like pizza?
Dude, I love pizza. I haven't found a good pizza joint. I don't know. People listening here in Ho Chi Minh City are like gasping right now. I've yet to have a good pizza. So any pizzeria, you know, owner, challenge me. Like, I would love to check it out. Try pizzas. I miss pizza. I miss pizza back home.
I had to throw that in on the Friday 13th. Now, I'm far from being an expert on Cambodia. So it'll be interesting to see how Pizza Hut goes. Comments in the Bureau Facebook group drew parallels with McDonald's here in Vietnam. Of course, Macca's or McDo in Vietnam arrived here around 2014, I think.
Yeah.
Opening quite a few outlets in the big cities with grand plans to open more. As it stands now, they're all shut, naturally, because of COVID. But from memory, we were already seeing closures before this wave. For example, the one opposite Notre Dame Cathedral, all the signage is gone.
Oh, so they're not going to open.
Well, I guess. I see. I guess that's what's happening.
Well, my fearless prediction, Macca's will survive, you know, if not only for loyal food delivery mobile app users like me. You know, man, I do love waking up hungover on a Sunday morning and thinking it's too painful to get up, but I'm hangry. And what do you know? Tap, tap, tap. And in 20 minutes, Macca delivery guys at your door.
Yeah, it's pretty handy, isn't
it? Yep, it is.
Yep. So the chatter in the... Also, sorry, Andy.
No, I was going to say, and also you have a lot of expats who need a bit of comfort food, right? And then McDonald's represents that comfort food.
Yep.
Quintessential.
The chatter in the Bureau Facebook group also led to Pizza 4P's foray into Cambodia recently with their first branch opening in Phnom Penh this past July.
Oh, so they were first.
Yeah, before Pizza Hut. Yep.
Okay.
Pizza 4P's is, I guess, what you would call a craft pizza chain that was founded in Vietnam by a Japanese couple here in Ho Chi Minh City.
Yeah, I'll pass.
Would that be fair, Andy, a craft pizza chain to describe Pizza 4P's?
Pizza chain. But what's so crafty about what they, what's so unique about what 4P's makes?
Well, when you say craft, isn't that handcrafted? But aren't all pizzas made by hand?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I guess because I tacked chain on the end of that, I thought, well, because I usually associate chain with, you know, like Pizza Hut
fast food.
Domino's and fast food and that. And I don't think I'd call it, it's not fast food.
No.
Is it?
It takes longer to arrive at your table for sure. Yeah.
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 Anyway, again...
But would you call it a craft, though? Would you call it a craft?
I mean, okay.
Like craft beer.
Well, I think it started out as kind of craft or artisanal, didn't it?
Okay.
You know, originally down near off Le Tan Ton Street, the original store there. It was tiny. He had a little...
You had to line up.
Even back then, it was really popular.
But when you say craft, isn't it just a fancy word for saying we're more expensive?
I don't know. Well, typically those places are more expensive.
Yeah, so maybe crafty.
Although Pizza 4P's isn't that expensive.
Sure.
Really?
Although you can say that, you know, at Pizza 4P's, the flavors that they have is not regular. Like they don't have like just a straight on pepperoni. You know, they try to mix it up with other ingredients like flours, I mean, vegetarian, vegetable flours and stuff like that, right? Yeah.
Yep. Japanese, Korean, Vietnamese, you know, inspired. Again, there was plenty to say about 4P's with commenters expressing their dislike for their pizzas. Mostly, here we go, Mel, mostly in relation to the obscure toppings and the importance placed on no burnt bases.
Right.
I think we've all seen them when the pizza comes out of the oven, someone grabs a knife or whatever and looks underneath and scratches
takes out
off
the black stuff.
Any sort of burnt stuff on there.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyhow, apparently there's a growing taste for pizza in Cambodia, as stated in the press release on thebureauasia.com. So I decided to look for some hard data to back that claim up. It appears, however, there's little available publicly on the supposed growth in the popularity of pizza in Cambodia.
Okay.
But we all know pizza is nothing new there. Domino's opened back in 2015.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I don't know how well they're going. And, of course, Happy Pizzas have been pretty popular over there for quite some time, they tell me.
Very happy memories of 2008 come flooding back in.
Come have on, you Mel, tell us.
Have you had a happy pizza, Andy?
No, what is it? Please tell me. I'm intrigued.
well, okay, so when you eat the pizza, you become very, very happy because of certain toppings.
Because of the topping.
Yeah, so instead of using green basil, they use something else that's green to make you happy.
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
So it's obvious that Andy hasn't had a visa run to Cambodia.
No, not yet. Not yet. We might have to do one, Andy, as soon as the borders open.
Border shut.
We're on it. Mel can stay here at Bureau home base, and we'll duck over and we'll try a happy pizza. Anyway, it seems Pizza Hut and 4Ps have seen enough to give them confidence to open there. In fact, Pizza Hut has plans to open 20 to 30 outlets in the next couple of years. As humans, we all love pizza. I'm not sure if I've ever met someone who doesn't like pizza.
No, not really. Nah.
Yeah. But somehow I'm struggling with the idea of Pizza Hut
and Cambodia,
those two together. It's a little bit like pineapple on pizza.
Mm. Hey, I like pineapple on pizza.
So do I. But there's this ongoing...
Me too.
Oh, great. The three of us love it.
Great.
There's this ongoing disagreement about pineapple on pizza.
Mm. Interesting.
Anyway. Now, I see Pizza Hut has kept the same name in Cambodia. However, it's not unusual for brands to alter names for different markets. Mm. Andy, you'd know that Burger King is called Hungry Jack's in Australia.
Yep.
Yeah, which seems a
Why?
Bit
weird.
I don't know. It's just better.
Yeah, I don't know. From memory, it came down to some kind of licensing ownership. Some guy in, I think it started in Perth, someone had...
Burger King.
Had the license to it already. And
oh, very smart guy.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's something about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll have to look it up. Anyway, I've come up with some alternatives for Pizza 4P should they consider changing their name for the Cambodian market. How about Pizza 420s or Pizza 420Ps to go with the tradition of happy pizzas there? Or... Pizza for munchies.
Oh.
How about that? You guys got any? Come on.
But it has to be a PG name. It can't be like a rated R name. Otherwise, they're going to lose their customer base.
Yeah, come on. One, two.
That was salty.
Anyway, any names, Andy? Anything in mind?
No, I'm thinking like Pizza 4K, but it's just... Doesn't have the P in it.
So like 4K video.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, definition. Yeah.
Well, it's a big yes to paying it forward here in Ho Chi Minh City. Last week, guys, we talked about how some F&B outlets in Ho Chi Minh City are offering vouchers for sale.
Yeah.
So that punters can pay it forward, so to speak, and support their favourite bars and restos during this difficult time.
Okay.
So the deal is, for the time being, you buy vouchers that are redeemable once delivery services and premises open up. At least a couple are offering discounts on purchases, including a special evening for only those people who support at this time.
Wow. And actually, I remember that since we broadcasted that episode, you were able to see a couple of, you know, other establishments that are doing it, right? So it's not just like a one-off, but a few of them. But
yeah, there's a few of them, yeah.
I wonder, though, if this is just within the expat community.
Yeah. Not too sure.
Yeah. Andy, you live downtown and you're in a more local place. Have you heard of anything similar with local establishments there?
No, I haven't. I suspect they will have something in mind.
Mm.
Very, very similar. I don't know how you would try and make it more different than it is. I mean, it's quite simple. You pay for a voucher, you redeem that voucher. The voucher has some sort of intrinsic value. You know, and some sort of offering that will entice you to actually buy those vouchers, besides, you know, the goodness of your heart coming in. I don't know. I've seen some places where they, you know, I mean, besides F&B, like you see some like people looking for shout outs and stuff, and then, you know, because they need to get on their feet or whatnot. And so, you know, they're asking for shout outs and on their whatever content they're building or anything like that. But, I don't think there's anything different. And I think it's a good concept. It's just seeing how people actually take to it and then how businesses will try and run with it and be ethical about it. But I think that's so cool.
Yeah, well, I ran a mini poll during the week on my Instagram account after our episode aired, asking our podcast listeners if they would purchase the vouchers or not. And interestingly, the responses reflected the vibe I was getting from people online and what you guys are saying as well. So 71% said they would support businesses who offered vouchers, leaving 29% saying they wouldn't.
Okay, that's a big
It's a fairly number. Small sample size, but, you know, it's sort of correlating with what we thought. Now, one other interesting insight resulting from that survey was that among the no responses.
Like no comment.
No. Saying no, they wouldn't support places. They also came from people who work in hospitality. So it wasn't just consumers saying no. It was hospitality peeps too. So there you have it.
What do you make of that, Andy?
I don't know. Maybe they just feel jaded or something. I don't know. Maybe they know something we don't know.
Yeah, probably.
That's right. Probably.
There's a good chance of that. I think there's a lot of people who know more than what we do. But I tell you what I'm thinking now is maybe the Bureau should put some vouchers out. What do you think? I might set up a poll for that. Yeah,
let's raffle off Andy. Single and ready to mingle voucher.
Yeah, that's an idea.
I'm terrible value right now.
But it's okay. We can redeem you when you're feeling better.
Okay, so that's a nice segue into this week's major topic about influencers and content creators, how they work, how they gain a following, and perhaps the most important thing, how the bloody hell do you earn a living from it?
If I only knew.
Andy, I can't see him, but he's probably nodding his head. But perhaps first, Mel, do you think we should define influencers and content creators first?
Yep. Sure.
Okay.
So, of course, there are overlaps, but some have obviously clear-cut lines. So let's set the tone. So according to a recent report in eMarketer, the traditional definition of an influencer is an individual who can sway the buying preferences of a larger population. So this can refer to a wide variety of people, from employees and industry professionals to celebrities and loyal customers. In that sense, creators are a subset of influencers. So creators are defined as people or entities that develop original content for digital properties and who consider creating that content to be either their full-time or their part-time career or livelihood. But the key word here is livelihood. Can we really live with just being a content creator?
So a content, an influencer is obviously a content creator, a content creator isn't necessarily an influencer.
Yeah, I think
they
so.
Do it, they can do it sort of back of house or whatever and that sort of thing.
So Andy, are you an influencer or content creator, you think?
I'm definitely not an influencer or a content creator, if anything.
You're getting a bit of traction on LinkedIn, though, I noticed.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I focus on LinkedIn. So if anyone who doesn't really know like what I do, I essentially kind of help businesses develop strategies, kind of move forward and try and solve some of their problems in a strategic way. And so typically, like, you know, people I talk to, I happen to converse a lot on LinkedIn anyway. And it's just trying to create content around it. And also, like, the algorithms that you're currently seeing right now on LinkedIn and Facebook, you know, they're diminishing year on year, whereas LinkedIn is still quite a new player. Okay. And so the algorithms aren't as, I guess, developed as the other.
Not as nasty.
Platforms are.
So therefore you can play with it.
Yeah. How about you, Matt? Is this a career? Is this a full-time gig? Are you an influencer, a creator?
I don't know about it. Well, actually, you've got me thinking. Firstly, before I answer that question, so I can answer this question, what's the definition of an influencer beyond what you've given us just now? Like, how many people need to follow you before you can be influential. Mm.
Well, I think we did an episode on this in the first season of the Bureau podcast, and I outlined macro, micro, nano, and niche. And I think we found ourselves in the niche influencer category.
We quickly looked at my numbers and looked down on the list and quickly ascertained niche. That I was niche.
Yeah,
so niche is lower than No.
I think with it? Niche, it's not a matter of numbers, but it's what your content pillars are. Okay. You know, like, okay, you are an expert in hospitality, food and beverage, lifestyle, health, travel within the Southeast Asia region, specifically Vietnam. So that's really niche, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Well, I have, you know, occasionally I have people come up to me and say they went to a bar because of me, because I suggested it, or a restaurant.
You're
or
an
whatever.
Influencer.
But, you know, I mean, how does that differ from just the average person who has an Instagram account who says, hey, this bar's good, go along to it?
Well, the monetization part probably is one, and we can talk about that later.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought there was one influencer we couldn't ignore this week. Mm-hmm. So let's have a chat about him.
Okay.
He set social media abuzz this past couple of weeks, especially in the Philippines, Mel.
Mm.
And that influencer is 29-year-old Israeli Nasir Yassin, otherwise known as Nas Daily.
Can we just devote 1 minute to this guy? Just 1 minute. Just 1 minute. Okay.
Do you know him, Andy?
Negative. He's anyway, I'm
going to
hold my judge. I'm
going to
let Mel talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what Mel is alluding to with the 1 minute thing will become clearer in
1 minute.
A minute. Nas Daily rose to prominence in 2016 after quitting his job.
Mm.
Not bad.
Okay.
And setting up a Facebook page. Doesn't sound very inspiring, doesn't it? Does
but
it?
But it does sound familiar.
I was about to say, Mel, how would you feel if I came to you and said, okay, I'm quitting my job and opening a Facebook page? I think I said...
I want to follow my dreams.
No, I think...
I want to leave a legacy.
I've never said that.
I know someone who did.
Yeah. But I think what actually happened in my case is that I didn't say I was quitting my job. I said I've quit/been sacked from my job.
Been made redundant.
And I'm starting a website. And I had no idea what I was doing. Even with a website, I had a Facebook page, of course.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I opened that in 2007. Mm.
But you quickly turned into a business page.
Well, that was by then. I'd had, you know, however long, 10 years experience using Facebook. But with a website, I had absolutely no idea. I remember buying a theme from Theme Forest and I just thought, oh, this is going to look like the samples or the examples on their website, and I got a folder, a zip file, and I unzipped it and I just went, oh my God. Yeah, I had no idea. Anyway.
Very different experience from Nas Daily.
Very different. He rose to prominence because he began posting 1 minute videos each day for 1,000 days. So anyone who's online a lot will know this guy, and anyone of a certain age group, you know, sort of under 40, I suppose. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, so now he has about 20 million followers on Facebook, about 3 million on Insta, 4 million on YouTube, millions of views on each video whenever he posts, tens of thousands of shares on each Facebook post.
Wow.
I was looking on his page yesterday and a lot of them have like 45,000 shares.
Mm.
The list goes on, including guesstimates that he earns about $15,000 per day.
Wow.
From his videos.
Hey, did you know that the creator economy in 2021 is expanding? And like in
That's great for me. Is it? Is that good news or?
I'm not really sure. Well, in late 2020, 50 million people worldwide considered themselves as creators.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're what? We're part of that 50 million.
Part
right?
of that ecosystem. Yeah. Oh, just yeah. 50 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right,
Andy.
Cool.
Welcome
That's
to
cool.
welcome to a very small select group.
Okay. Well, then last year he created NASS Academy. And just this month, this is where the shit has hit the fan for him. NASS Academy runs on a similar model as platforms like Coursera, Udemy, I think, Upwork, and so on. They offer mini courses via recorded and live video with communities of like-minded learners from around the world. And, of course, they pay for the privilege or they pay for the what they learn. NASS Academy bills it as a platform for world-class learning with global classmates, live sessions, and practical tips to help you in the 21st century.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the courses are targeted at creators or wannabe creators like us and businesses. So for creators, there are courses called How to Crush It on Facebook. Presented by NASS himself.
Okay.
Well, I think he's pretty qualified with 20 million followers. Mm-hmm. The Art of Storytelling.
Well, I heard that he tells a lot of propaganda stories.
Oh, yeah, well.
He's an expert. Yep.
Those, that axe is out.
Mm-hmm.
But NASS Academy has recruited so-called experts from around the world to present these masterclasses. So it's not just him.
He called you? Did you get an email from NASS Daily?
Well, I might be getting one in the next few weeks after this scandal.
Right.
You never know. He might be a bit desperate. And this is where NASS Daily's most recent controversy ignited. Long story short, NASS Academy is alleged to have signed an agreement with Wang Od.
Hey, that's the from the Philippines, old lady.
Yeah, she's 104 years
tattoos,
old.
Tattoos, yeah.
Yeah. She's a tattoo artist and she's the last of the Kalinga, is that
Kalinga,
right, Mel?
Yeah, Kalinga.
Tattooists in the Philippines.
Yeah, it's an ancient art, yep.
Yeah, that's right. And it's said to be like 1,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course, she was to reveal her rituals, tools and methods for making traditional tattoos for 750 pesos. Which is about, is that right, 15 bucks?
You're selling tradition for 750 pesos.
Well, this is what caused this furor over there in the Philippines.
Okay.
So the grandniece of Wang Od came out publicly and accused NASS Academy as a scam.
How can a 100-year-old lady be on YouTube?
Yeah. Well,
like record her.
I think the issue wasn't about her being on YouTube or whatever, but it was about how can someone of that age
speak or write. Well, there are oral histories about her.
I don't want to sound ageist, but she's 104.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of anthropologists in the Philippines and Western anthropologists as well who've written about her and who've documented her art and the art of her people. So is NASS appropriating those oral histories to benefit his creator academy?
Yeah, well, I think his grandniece was saying that, NASS Academy, NASS Daily and NASS Academy were taking advantage of her culture.
Yeah.
But I think what's sort of happened is people are asking, because NASS Daily, he's adamant that there was a contract.
Okay, signed by
Wang
who?
Well, she signed it. He then put out, when this fired up online, he put out a video showing the lady stamping a document with a thumb. She had ink on a thumb and was...
Oh. Did she even know what she was signing?
Well, this is what I was about to say before. Like, you know, this. I think this is the argument that
actually,
she didn't know what she was doing. But presumably the family were there as well.
Okay.
So,
well, actually, you know, I haven't really read up on this controversy until you mentioned it, you know, yesterday. So it's, yeah, I personally, as a Filipino, I feel kind of like there's something dodgy with it, like the age of the lady and the way our culture is being appropriated in this way, you know.
Yeah, well, the Filipinos definitely reacted. And then within a day, he'd lost about almost 400,000 followers.
Wow.
Imagine that in one day. How's that?
Yeah. Well, he's
I don't know how many he's lost now.
I mean, he's not the first influencer that lost like a million followers a day. I mean, a few years ago, there was this thing with like beauty blogger influencers in America, like Tati Westbrook. And that also caused some controversies, like, you know. Somebody, it's a makeup thing. I'm not into beauty bloggers, but I know that, you know, like a Tati Westbrook scandal was in this league.
Yeah, well, as a result of the backlash, NASA Academy has decided to cease operations in the Philippines for now.
Just in the Philippines. They should do it all over the world.
Well, I don't know.
Isn't it an online academy, though?
Yeah.
Well, then why just in the Philippines?
Well, maybe it means... any videos?
Ah, okay.
You know, sourced from any content sourced in the Philippines. But anyway, he still maintains that he got the appropriate consent, and he's made a public statement defending himself. So there's obviously two sides to the story. Only time will tell, you know, what really happened. But there's a bit of brand damage there. What do you think, Andy?
Massive brand damage, man. With all brands like them, like, you know, this story will probably blow over. NASA's probably thinking it'll blow over in the next month or so, and, you know, things will be trucking along. I mean, he's not really, you know, he's not really short on cash. He's making $15K a day.
NAS Daily is, this is not his first controversy. There's a lot, you know? And of course, that whole thing when he went to Singapore to live there and he started appearing in a lot of, you know, Singaporean propaganda. And so, yeah, he's not a stranger to controversy and still here. And he has a Harvard degree.
Does he?
Was it Harvard or Yale?
Oh, yeah. Harvard, I think.
He got a scholarship.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah. Wow. Crazy.
But pretty phenomenal, his rise in just 5 or 6 years. He's 29 and he has that following. Unbelievable. Andy, what do you think he would do to recover or salvage his reputation in the Philippines?
Stay quiet.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. We're trying to defend yourself, man. And then, you know, just look to start afresh. Showing a bit of humility and transparency in terms of that. And possibly, like, you know, I don't know, man, it's kind of weird saying, oh, I've got this contract with this lady who's 104 years old.
Yep.
I've got this thumbprint, you know, and it's like, dude, just quiet. Let it blow over.
Yeah, perhaps it'll blow over as quickly as it flared up. You know, that tends to happen online, doesn't it?
That tends to happen with influencers. They blow up and then they bust and then they move on.
Speaking of moving on, someone we don't know really well, but we know of well, Sunny, Sunnyside.
Oh, yeah?
He was, of course, based in Ho Chi Minh City for the last maybe 2 years.
The Best Food Review Show.
Yeah, from the Best Food Review Show.
The guy with the red thing, the red bandana.
Yeah, the red bandana. Yeah. He's got a great following himself, about 6 mil or
he's
something.
He's got great
like
content
that.
Too.
Yeah, he's great. I think he's awesome. Yeah. He's done an amazing job. He was here for 2 years and, COVID-19. And
he got COVID?
No. COVID-19 happened.
Oh, okay.
And he, I don't know whether it was
by design
or not, but he was in Ho Chi Minh City at the time and decided to base himself here.
Okay.
And then, you know, you can only produce so many videos on Ho Chi Minh City street food before, you know, to start looking elsewhere. So
he was producing like 2 videos a week.
Yeah, they'd come out Wednesday and Sunday.
So that's a lot
of
content.
Other stuff as well.
So where is he now?
He's in the States somewhere.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Well. Where do we go?
We're a bit flat today.
No,
you're hanging in there, Andy. How's your throat and all that?
Yeah, no, I'm listening.
Good.
So, Andy, compared to Matt and I, you're a fairly newish transplant here in Vietnam. So you know Sunnyside, and he's gone. And so who do you think are, you know, candidate to take his place?
You wanna... That's a good question.
Mm.
Sort of.
Who's the second person? Sonny and who?
Well, I was about to say Calvin, but he also left, didn't he?
Do you think? Yeah, he left.
Wasn't he like Sonny's co-host? I thought
He is. I think, yeah.
Yeah, I thought actually that Sonny was like grooming Calvin to be his like, okay, I'm grooming. Going back to the States and then, you know, you can have Vietnam, but it looks like Calvin followed Sonny.
Yeah, he's back there.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, anyway. He's looking for a car.
Maybe they're a couple.
No, of course not. So I really don't know if this is going to get included in the final edit. So maybe we...
Yeah, don't give me too much work.
So, okay. So Matt and Andy, so can I take over the mic a little bit?
Be my guest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you guys some of the burning questions about content creation since, well, you two are... Uh-huh. Two of my favorite content creators.
Oh, not influencers. Thanks, man.
So, firstly, Andy, would you like to start with, you know, the pros and cons of being a content creator? And as I said, you're fresher meat than Matt here is in Ho Chi Minh City. So, yeah, just contextualize a little bit of your content creation pros and cons experience here in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam as well.
In 25 words or less.
Yeah.
In a minute. Okay. So I have my own podcast. It's called The Point of View Show. It's a business podcast. And the good thing is it looks to interview business professionals from all across the world, but predominantly in Southeast Asia and APAC region. And we talk about things like, you know, leadership, marketing, branding, and sales. And these shows kind of go for like a short, you know, 25, 30 minutes, sometimes a little bit longer. Flow is pretty simple for me, because I literally have like three or four questions that I set up very, very simple, with that particular guest. And we make it into a conversation flow, like very, very similar to the way we make like conversations right now.
Yeah.
So that we follow up questions that come in, but it's just on the flow and it's just a really nice, easy conversation. And then after that, I cut it up and then just, you know, compress it into whatever I need from like audio podcast or video podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of post that coming through. But like you said, you know, with LinkedIn, I developed specific content pieces and snippets for LinkedIn. And so I, you know, like as we're kind of talking and as I'm looking through my notes, then I'm like, oh, okay, cool. This is going to be really perfect. I'm going to set this up for my guests to kind of answer this particular burning question. And then that can be like a little snippet content piece straight up.
Yeah.
So in my mind, as I'm having these conversations and I rewatch it afterwards as I'm editing, then I'm able to kind of like, go, all right, cool. This is what I'm going to put into it. Being based here in Saigon, like, is really good because, you know, your time zone wise is a little bit easier to find my guests around Southeast Asia.
Yep.
And unfortunately, right now with the lockdown, we can't really move. But with the advent of Zoom, for instance, you can record it and they're pretty good quality. And then all you have to do is just kind of edit it.
Mm. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. How about you, Matt?
The upside.
Mm-hmm.
I like coming up with ideas and then executing them.
Okay.
You know, that gives me a buzz. I've learned a lot. So I came from the education field. And ironically, I feel like it de-skilled me. I feel like, you know, I worked in university education for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of started in English teaching and then student services and academic support and all that sort of stuff. And, I felt like I unlearned. I was great at PowerPointing, emailing. If my computer went off, I was able to call IT pretty quickly and get them to come and have a look. So when I finished up there, I walked out of where I was working and just thinking, God, I don't know how to do anything. So what's happened with me over the last, geez, it's 5 or 6 years now,
Do we have 20 million followers like Nas Daily when he started off 5 years ago?
I'm on the way. I'm on the way. I walked out of there feeling overeducated. Like I've got a handful of university degrees, but de-skilled. And so I found doing what I'm doing now at the beginning super, super challenging. It was hard because I didn't know anything much about tech.
Yeah. Platforms.
I did a lot of writing.
Okay.
But it was academic writing, a lot of that.
But then you went into features writing for not online, but print.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that was another challenge. So to move from academic writing into
creative writing,
either creative writing or for the media,
technical writing,
that was a challenge as well because academic writing, as you know, Mel, you know, you can, well, how big's a PhD and all that sort of stuff? You know, you
I'm going to find out soon.
Yeah. But now at this point in time, I've got the confidence to do a podcast like what we're doing now. I'll edit it. Hopefully I won't need to do too much. Start tonight, finish it tomorrow, then have it up online by lunch tomorrow, you know, and same with video. So I've got the basics down. With all that, tons of room for improvement.
Yep,
definitely. But I feel like that's improving all the time. Now the obvious con, is money. You know, as anyone will tell you in the game, Andy will tell you. You'll tell me.
I always harp on it at the end of the month.
Where is the money? except for Sunny and Nas Daily, obviously. It's really hard to make money.
Well, Calvin is also having a hard time earning money. I think he's like, you know, wants to buy a car.
Yeah. Well, you know, people have different ways of trying to gain revenue, you know, in content.
But do you reckon that's the best way to gain revenue? Question to you guys.
Can I jump into that?
What is the best way, or do I think that way is the best way?
Well, let me set it up first. Yeah. So why don't I tell you what are the ways to make legal money out of content creation, and then you can, you know, jump in. So according to the same report I mentioned earlier from eMarketer, U.S. marketers have actually invested 20% of their advertising budgets for this year and in the next years to influencer marketing and paid content.
Okay.
So content creators...
Can I just stop you there? Is 20% a lot? It seems like a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot. Man.
It is. So... this also includes, so content creators benefit from that, and they can also engage in brand partnerships. So that's the number one revenue for most content creators, as well as revenue streams available to them in platform monetization. Like obviously when you're on YouTube and if you reach the threshold of followers and session time views, watch views, then you can monetize yourself. And Facebook is also doing that. Instagram is also doing that. TikTok is doing that. There's also affiliate marketing. Influencers and content creators are becoming brands themselves as well. And then there's this thing that I keep on like alluding to earlier, and I really want to get your comment on it. So there's something called tipping. Okay, so tipping. On YouTube or for gamers on Twitch. So there's also things like asking people to buy them a coffee.
Right, okay.
So yeah, those are the things.
Sort of Patreon.
Yeah.
Patreon
or
accounts.
Like there's a platform called Cameo, you know, where you ask people, hey, do you want me to greet you a happy birthday or give you a shout out? Then you get on Cameo and then you get your favorite influencer or creator to do that for your friends and family who's having a birthday.
That's pretty cool. My friend's wife did that to my friend because he's like a massive basketball player and he was like a Vince Carter fan.
Okay.
And he got Vince Carter to like wish him a happy birthday. It was pretty dope, to be honest.
How much?
Yeah, how much was it?
Not that much. It was only like couple hundred bucks. It's a quick shout out. That's 30 seconds.
Yeah, so those are the, you know, the reported ways to make money legally and I guess ethically to some point, morally and ethically to some point as a content creator.
Yep.
So, yeah, that answers your question earlier. So, where do you want to take that?
I'll have it in cash. Don't screw the coffee. I'll just have the cash.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a few more questions for you guys. Okay. And if you could just, you know, maybe shortly answer them.
Yep.
So I was also going to ask you, you know, what works and what doesn't work on the social platforms that you choose to be creators on? Mm. Yeah. How about you, Andy? You can start first. You were talking about LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Is that your main platform?
That is my main platform that I will focus my content arcs on. So I guess the good thing about it is that the algorithm is easier to understand and maximize. One of the hard things though is it's not, because it's not as mature in comparison to say YouTube, like YouTube celebrities and stuff.
Yeah.
You can't have like paid sponsorship on your posts because it's a personal, it's your personal, you know, post. So you can't really put like paid sponsorship to try and boost it or anything like that that you can do easily do on Facebook or on YouTube. Like you can easily just like put $100 in and get like thousands of views. You know, looking at your content piece. So it's kind of hard to do that. I mean, there are ways that LinkedIn does not support, which you can do, like creating pods and all that kind of stuff. So that's, I guess that's one of the bad things about it. But at the same time, you can do what some of the other content creators are doing and I've seen already on LinkedIn, which is they work with brands, like big brands directly. It's like a in-content sponsored type of ad. So it's not like basically like, oh, hey, I want to spend like 2 seconds like just talking about XYZ company.
Yep. You
know? So that's one way to get around it. But yeah, that's the pros and cons. So pros is that, yeah, you can, like, the algorithm's pretty easy to understand. Cons is you can't you know, do direct paid advertising to views on it. You have to go through the old school way of doing it.
And Matt, my question to you, and it's probably the maybe the last question for this segment is, can you share a funny or disastrous experience or otherwise in your journey as a content creator?
You've sprung this on me, this one. Are you winking at me? A disastrous one. I don't think I've had a disastrous one yet.
Funny.
A funny one. A funny experience.
Yeah.
No, I don't really have those. I know that sounds pretty boring. But I have a lot of sort of jaw-dropping moments. You know, like in terms of making a living.
Okay.
From doing this sort of stuff. I feel like, and I don't know if this is true, but I feel like that, say, whether it's restaurants or whatever business, whatever companies or whatever they do, they sit around at the start of the financial year, do a budget.
Yep.
And they talk about how they're going to allocate their money.
Yep.
And then
20%.
Well, yeah, that's what the report says, doesn't it?
Yeah. In America.
I'm talking about Ho Chi Minh City.
Okay.
So, and I just, I get the feeling that at the very bottom of the list or the last page or whatever, there's get someone who's online a lot, maybe an influencer, and it's scratched there in pencil. Oh, get Matt from the bureau. You know, get him in, see if we can get him a free feed and a drink.
A burger and a
you
beverage.
You can feel like it's a very, and I'm, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh dear.
So
yeah,
the
that's
reports
an inside
are,
joke there. That's why we're laughing.
So the reports are not true that brand marketers, establishments, companies allot 20% of their budget to influencer marketing.
They probably do. In our environment, we're working in an environment where 99.9% of the population speaks Vietnamese. So
that's right.
They probably do a lot. You know, 19.99% of their budget to Vietnamese media and influencers, and then you know, someone like me fits into that last point one or whatever it is.
Percent. Yeah, you know, just to interject, like there's some really interesting things, like when you look at that, like Asia in general, like, you know, they didn't even use the word influence. They use KOLs, right? Key opinion leaders.
Mm.
And they've got different grades as well. So it might be true that they might allocate 20% to a pool of influencers.
Yeah.
That pool is then subdivided between, you know, B, A, B, and C.
So there's tiers. Tiers.
Yeah, tiers, 100%.
And I just think, just to wrap up, my last comment about that is that it probably comes back to education in my case. A lot of places it feels like they say, okay, we want to market our place. Just like I said before, just go and grab someone who's on Facebook all the time or is pretty good at social media. They have some good stories and stuff like that. But they don't seem to realize how long it takes
to make one social, piece of content,
you know, or just to do social media. That's a full-time job in large companies. Mm-hmm. But they want you to do a website article, Facebook post, Instagram post,
a story,
and then can you throw in a video at the end? And you're like, video? Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah, and so. Anyway,
I think that's an area that I really, if I needed to improve on, would be educating potential clients out there how much time it takes, you know, to do these things. Okay, well, that's all we've got time for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed this Friday the 13th episode.
No, wait, that's for Halloween.
I want to thank my co-host, Melanie the Widowmaker Kasul. Thanks, Mel.
Sure, no problem, anytime.
You can catch Mel lurking around on social media on Instagram at Melanie Kasul and on all the Bureau Asia channels. And a big thanks again to Andrew, the Tranquilizer Tran.
Ding, 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 ding.
What up?
You can follow AT so he can stalk you at Andrew Tran Digital on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, including at andrewtran.asia.
Mm.
So that's T-R-A-N. Last but not least, thank you for listening. If you liked what you heard, let us know or rate us wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you didn't like what you heard, just don't come and kill us. Don't forget to check out the Bureau Asia online at thebureauasia.com for the latest in F&B travel, lifestyle and murder in Vietnam and Southeast Asia, and also on Facebook and Instagram. Where at, Andy?
At the Bureau Asia.